Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is
nothing that we won't do to help you find safety and stabilization. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and thank you. Sorry about the pause. I don't know what was happening on the airwaves, but that's okay. We're here now. And, you know, I hope that you had a holiday that brought you some sense of safety and serenity. I say that because, you know, holidays are tough, and being a psychotherapist working with a variety of men, women, families, kids, they're all coming in with a story that is not necessarily their vision of a good holiday. So hopefully for you it was, because I got to tell you, when you are living your life and you've had a crisis or a trauma, it's hard to breathe through those events that are associated with joy and happiness and giving and loving. And if you've been through betrayal trauma for a while, you probably are figuring out how to recreate that, if nothing else, for yourself and perhaps for your kids and hopefully for your spouse if you're still with him or her. You know, it's tough. So I just want to tell you, the two toughest holidays are Valentine's Day and Christmas, because there's so much press about they should be Hallmark-like. And we all know there really isn't that much of a Hallmark life. I mean, I want to encourage you to believe that there you can have really good moments with your spouse, with your family, with yourself. But the truth of the matter is, the holidays have gotten really, 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 really busy. And the increase in intensity of what you have to do, the money you have to spend, the people you have to visit, can make them rough. Just in the same way as Valentine's Day, you know, that's supposed to be a Hallmark moment. It's supposed to be romantic. You're supposed to look at each other and fireworks are supposed to be going off. And that is likely not going to happen for most people. Now, I had an interesting email. I say that because so many of you send me questions about, you know, how can I help? What can I do to make my life better? This email said, Carol, I have struggled for so long with my husband, and in part that's because he has struggled with same-sex attraction for our entire marriage. We underwent counseling about 18 years ago. I recently discovered that my husband has been engaging in high-risk sexual behaviors, and he is finally admitting that he believes he meets the criteria for sex addiction. I am heartbroken. I have known this all along, but via his admission, I now have to look at my own denial because he's my best friend, and I don't want to believe that he's a sex addict. I want to believe he can change. And then she says, do you ever work with clients who have same-sex attraction? Well, the truth of the matter is that, you know, many of the men that I work with have at least experimented or explored sexual behaviors with men. And that's a little different than same-sex attraction. I mean, when I read this, same-sex attraction means this is a man who is either bisexual or homosexual. Now, I believe sex is on a continuum. You got heterosexuality over here. You got bisexuality in the middle. And you got homosexuality on the other side. And we all of us, sit somewhere on that continuum. You know, I know there'll be people out there, partners that say, well, I am, you couldn't move me any farther on the heterosexual dial. And that's great. You know who you are. That's how you feel. And that can make life very, very simple. Then you got people that are on the bisexual continuum. I mean, they're, you know, maybe they're an inch over towards heterosexual. Maybe they're an inch over towards homosexual. They can really play it both ways. And they may have explored that or they may not. That's certainly where we got the terminology bi-curious. And then you've got people that are way over on the other side. Well, I encouraged this partner to call because what I knew to be true is that I needed more information. I wondered more about what her feelings were and her thoughts. Knowing that, she may only have limited capacity to be able to answer me. I mean, how much have they talked about it? How much has she read up about it? Why does she say same-sex attraction? Is he attracted to her? Has he always been attracted to her? You know, there's clearly couples that I've worked with where the man has been in denial. He's really somewhere between bi and homosexual, but he did what he thought was the right thing. He married his best friend. You know, he married somebody that he thought was attractive. I mean, I look at beautiful women all the time. I you know, see beautiful women, and I go, she is gorgeous. Wow, she is smart. But I don't ever have a sexual thought about her. But I can appreciate that a gay man who doesn't believe he's gay, doesn't want to know he's gay, is in denial about gay, or he's bisexual, but he's over there in that quadrant. And I can believe that he could look at a woman and say, you know what, she's an incredible woman. She would be a great mother. I want to have kids. I want to marry her. And then, because he's not honest with himself, he, of course, struggles with, but I want to know this other life, too. And although men have always acted out with men if they were curious, boy, the internet makes it so affordable, accessible, and anonymous. I mean, they can peruse and look and chat And in an anonymous way for years. But that can drive that compulsion that makes it sexual addiction. And then before they know it, they can't stop. They act out. And then if that fuses with high risk behavior, we're in trouble. Because then that means they're getting sexual stimulation from the secrecy, the taboo, and they also have dabbled in, had sexual relations with same-sex relationships, and if they've developed a compulsivity, that does not stop. So I'm sad that she didn't call, but I get that. I mean, if you ever have a question and you want to ask me about it, you know that I can speak with you anonymously on this line. Now, I know there may be a fear that someone would recognize your voice. But in most cases, well, I've never run into this, and I've had a podcast, gosh, since 2007. So for 13 years, people have been able to call in anonymously and they're not recognized, as long as I don't use their name. So feel free. If you have a question, if you want to talk, we always have 15 minutes at the beginning of every show that we can designate for you and your question. We at APSATS believe in being referral sources, sending you to the right people, getting you to partner-sensitive coaches and clinicians, because we know you've been traumatized and we don't want you to be traumatized any further. Now, today, I have a woman who, unfortunately, will be sharing her own story, and it was a tough one. And she has felt like her relationship with her husband that resulted in divorce could have been dramatically different if she had had the skills and the tools and the tips to make it such. And as a result, she made it her passion to help other women whose relationships end up in result. I mean, result in just divorce. And she really is somebody who has a passion for partners and wants to help them through this process. And she's going to be talking about practical tools and tips that she believes will make your journey easier if you're going through a divorce. So I'm so excited to be welcoming Kim Petroni to the call and to talk about this subject, because we really don't talk much about divorce. I know we've had some coaches on that had divorce groups, and we've got coaches designated for that, and yet we really try to be neutral. And if the coupleship can be saved, we want to do that. And if you want a divorce, there's no shame or judgment here. So Kim, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And I was just sharing with the audience a little bit earlier that you really have made this part of your purpose in life to help women through this process. So can you give our listening audience a little background about you and what you went through, and then what you wish would have been different?
Sure. Well, I have been married. I got married in 2001 and had a wonderful marriage to a guy who kind of saved me from an extremely abusive marriage prior to that. And we got married. We had four kids. We homeschooled them, a very faithful family. And in 2016, in August, I knew things were off just a little bit, but I couldn't quite peg it. And like many of you, we went to marriage therapy, and finally it came out that he was running a different life than I knew about. And we tried therapy for, about 6 months. I was devastated. I was in a fog. I couldn't grasp what was happening. And finally, about 6 months after, the Lord really put it on my heart that he wasn't going to heal himself unless I separated myself from him. I felt like he was working continually to try to check the boxes and to go through his own recovery stages, but it didn't feel genuine. And so I wanted to basically free him and give him the opportunity to heal himself. So I filed for divorce in December of 2017, and about 5 months later, we had a mediation, and he asked me to reconcile, and I didn't. I refused to do it because I still wasn't seeing healing from him. And at that point in time, my life changed to an unbelievable, chaotic mess of trying to save my children, trying to continue homeschooling. I had to find an attorney that was extremely aggressive, and then I had to educate myself on a partner who is unwilling to change and at the same time pursue destroying me. So it was a really tough experience for me. And I blessedly fell in. Go ahead.
Can I ask you, what was his shift? Why did he turn on you like that? Because you weren't ready or willing to reconciliate, move back?
That's correct. That as soon as he saw that I was not going to budge at all on requiring him to continue his own therapy and do things that someone who's trying to become healed from an addiction like that, he completely flipped. He went back to his old behaviors, and it was clear to me that, in fact, he really wasn't trying to change prior to that. He was just trying to check boxes. The more I learned about him, the more I really discovered that this is a long-term behavior of him just being very abusive, and me, as I reflected back on the behaviors that he had me doing and talking in circles and the arguing and just everything kind of started to fall into place. So he wasn't just your, I don't want to use the word normal, but he wasn't just a guy suffering from an addiction that really wanted to salvage his marriage and get healed. I was in a different world.
And you know, you said it was some long-term behavior, and I would agree with that, but it really smacks of how addicts are when they don't get their way and they want what they want, and so then all of a sudden they get controlling and forceful and start to bully, and that's what it sounds like he had to do. And so that's why there was a quest for you to find an attorney who could stand up for you, who was aggressive. Right?
That's correct.
Initially.
That's correct. Yep, initially. And I had kind of been led to this attorney. Just someone had mentioned, well, if you want a bulldog, here, take this guy. And I think in my relationship with him over the past 3 years, I am able to see now how my brain fog could have been, our journey together could have been so much, well, cheaper, but also more direct. If I had had someone like me sitting next to me saying, here are some tools that you need. When you walk into his office, have this. Don't scream at him. You know, here's how you want to behave in a courtroom. Here's what's going to happen. But if I had had someone kind of given me a heads up, it would have made, I think, my emotional state much less fragile.
Well, and that's where these tips and tools and strategies that you're going to be sharing with us can be very, very helpful for anybody who's contemplating a divorce or who's going through a divorce right now. I mean, you've really come up with some great resources. So I'm going to ask you, what resources were especially helpful in walking you through the healing for yourself?
It's kind of twofold in my situation. The first book that I came across was Barbara Steffens and her book, Your Sexually Addicted Spouse. It helped me understand that the emotional responses I was having was absolutely normal. While they were horrific and foggy, it's exactly what partners go through. So that was super helpful. Intimate Deception
absolutely.
Is a book by Sherry. Yep.
Yeah, Sherry Intimate. Kaffer.
Sherry Kaffer. Lundy Bancroft's book, Why Does He Do That?, was extraordinarily clarifying for me to be able to put what a normal, healthy guy ought to behave like versus what I was dealing with. And that really solidified some behaviors that I had been accepting from him that were not okay. When I traveled down sort of investigating narcissism, One Mom's Battle by Tina Swithin was remarkable in helping me clarify emails, just stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, spell her last name, because that's a book that I'm not familiar with.
Swithin. Swithin, Swithin. I'm
okay.
Pretty sure.
And so she wrote a book about narcissism, and I just want to give a plug to Marcia Means, because I
yes.
actually got an email from somebody who said, you keep talking about your sexually addicted spouse and you reference Barb, but you don't reference Marcia Means. And, of
Marcia.
Course, they had a partnership. And
yep.
and Marcia is the woman that came to Barb and said, hey, you want to write a book? Mm. So it was her idea. And wasn't that a fabulous book, Kim?
It was actually remarkable. And in my healing process, after I read that, I didn't have a therapist that I could that got me, that understood the process. So I decided I was just going to hunt down the author of this book. And so I did find Barb, who was able to kind of walk me through some healing processes. But I know Marcia Means, I've read a lot of her stuff too. It's been extremely informative and insightful in helping partners heal.
Well, yes, and boy, I love that you took the bull by the horns. You were determined that you were going to get the right resources, and I want to encourage other people that finding the right book, Intimate Deception, is also by an APSATS graduate, mm-hmm. Sherry Kaffer. Barb,
yep.
of course, was our first president for APSATS. I mean, she put APSATS together because she wanted partners to have partner-sensitive treatment. And, you know, Kim, you can tell that you are a take-charge person. So, you know, we talk about that first stage of discovery and really dealing with addiction and needing to feel safe and stable. And you were trying to create that as much as you could, weren't you?
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
okay,
go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say, what resources were enlightening for your journey through the courts? You were trying to figure it out regarding your husband, but hey, what did you use to get you through what can be a second betrayal within the court system?
At the time that I started, the only book that I could find that was even kind of helpful to me was a book titled Splitting, and it's called Protecting Yourself While Divorcing Someone with Borderline or Narcissistic Personality Disorder. It's by Bill Eddy, and that kind of helped me understand what an attorney might need from me. More recently, within the past few months, another book has come out that's called High Conflict, Divorce, and Women, and it's by Deborah Doak. Her last name is spelled D-O-A-K. And one thing I found with all of these books, for my brain, I couldn't read. I was not able to absorb anything that was in writing to me. And all of those books were available on Audible. And I just listened to them and kind of let them permeate my brain. I didn't get frustrated if I couldn't remember exactly what was being said. But listening to them really helped get information in my brain.
Well, that totally makes sense. And for anybody who's just now going through discovery and hasn't done as much research as it sounds like you have, that frequently happens. The brain goes offline once somebody has been rejected by sexual or partner betrayal. And so I get that it was hard for you to comprehend and retain information. And when you heard it, it made it easier for you. So I'm glad that you brought up that audible was actually easier for you than reading it.
Yes, absolutely. And it also, in a family, when you have many small children around and kids that can read, it's helpful not to have hard copy books in front of you that have titles that perhaps you don't want children to see.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So now I'm going to ask you, what do you believe are some steps that partners should look at and do initially if they're considering divorce? I mean, what's the process you would take them through?
Well, the first thing you want to do is to see if you can find a coach or a therapist or someone who gets you, who understands. If you've made a discovery and you understand that there is sexual addictive behavior occurring and you have been traumatized, you need to get yourself to see someone who can kind of help you put your feet back on the ground. Once that's done, if you decide that you really don't think that it's going to work or that you need a place of safety for a little while to heal, the first thing you want to do is make sure you have cash. There are a lot of ways that you can kind of, I call it hoarding cash, but to make sure that you have cash just in case something happens and the bank accounts get closed, or I've just heard so many situations where that's the first thing that the spouse will remove from the partner is cash. You can go to the grocery store, and every time you go to the grocery store, take out an extra $20 if they ask if you want cash back. Gift cards are a great thing that you can kind of just stockpile those, $20 here, $20 there. Get a credit card in your name. Those are ways just to affirm that you have financial stability. Another thing that a lot of people don't think about doing is make sure that you go to the doctor. If you have health insurance, get your kids to make sure all their immunizations are up to date, they've gone to the dentist, the eye doctor, that you've gone to the dentist, to the eye doctor, you've done your annual pap smear, things like that, just to make sure that you're medically prepared. Those are kind of the two main things that are real important. You need to have a safe place to go. If you're not sure about how he's going to respond, if you say you want to separate, you need to have someplace safe that maybe he doesn't know about, at your parents' house, a friend's house. So safety is pretty much a primary concern, especially if you're dealing with someone who you think may tend to be more abusive than not.
Oh, that's a really good point. And certainly you were looking at narcissism. So all of a sudden, you kind of came out of denial and thought, wow, as he really begins to show his colors, he seems very narcissistic. And of course, for anybody out there who doesn't know what narcissism is, he usually is a person that's very, very wounded, that sees the world from their eyes only. So everything has to revolve and evolve around them. And that's why he got so mad at Kim when she wouldn't do what he wanted her to do. And so safety and stabilization is so much more difficult when you're dealing with a narcissist. And I'm wondering if your attorney supported that, the fact that he seemed very belligerent and non-flexible. Did the attorney ever say anything to you about that?
Well, it's funny. My attorney is very, very assertive, and he was just certain that we could get through this like normal people do. And so after a period of time when I kept on giving him emails and giving him like financial information, it took him about a year before he really got that, oh, we're not dealing with an easy divorce here. And I know that, sometimes, too, I tell women when they walk into an attorney, understand what your bottom line is. What are you going to fight for? Is it finances? Is it keeping your kids more often than not? What is it that you're fighting for? And mine was to fight for homeschooling. As soon as I said that I was not going to reconcile, he wanted to put the children into a brick-and-mortar school, which for them would have caused a lot more emotional distress. And so I just put my feet down and I said, we're fighting for homeschooling. I don't care about anything else. The Lord will take care of the house, the money, everything, but I want to continue homeschooling them. So that was kind of my platform with him. And as he tried to ease me into normal, most parents will let their kids go to school, and he started to see it, that the more I put my feet down, the crazier the world got. Then he really started to embrace, we have to do something different now. But it took about a year for him to really get what we were working with.
Let me ask you, was your husband being difficult about homeschooling because he knew that that was a way to get back at you to retaliate? Or was there some financial cost in homeschooling that he didn't want to pay?
No, actually, it was to get back at me. Our homeschooling, we use a free program, so it's actually more expensive for me to send my children to school and buy them school clothes than to keep them home and let them do it in the pajamas. So it had nothing to do with finances.
Well, and that's what I thought. And so what I hear you telling our listeners is so important for you to know your bottom line and what you're fighting for legally. And then it sounds like you tried and tried to get your attorney to understand and see that this wasn't going to be a normal divorce, that this was a man who wasn't going to budge, and it was going to be very, very difficult. And the attorney, it took him a whole year to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, and I think some of that was because I was walking into the wounded partner. I didn't know exactly how to clearly state what I wanted. I remember being very emotional at times, and I didn't have all my documents together, and I'm pretty organized, but I know that if I had had someone to kind of give me a little bit of knowledge on how the judge was going to respond, how to be concise, how to be efficient with my time with him, I think we would have moved a little more quickly. So he was kind of being a therapist and an attorney at the same time.
Yeah, I hear that. And, you know, the other thing I think, obviously, I don't know how long after you made the decision to divorce that you got into that attorney. But for so many women, again, their brain's offline. So being concise is going to be difficult. So is one of your tools to write your questions and concerns down for the attorney?
Absolutely. I find that women who are coming out of an environment where they've been so mentally abused, the more you have written in front of you, the more you can cling to it. And you're not worried about whether or not your mind's going to wander. You don't have to even concern yourself with it because it's all right in front of you. And you want to go into your attorney with all of your questions written down, have as much of your financial information available to him. He's going to ask you, how much money does the household make? How much in debt are you? Are you able to pay me? Things like that are things that women don't think about when they walk in. They just want to be free and that their children are taken care of. Questions, how often are you willing to have the children during the week? Do you want them every other weekend? What do you want your summers to look like? Are you going to go to work? If you do work now, are you going to stop? So many questions that if you're interviewing an attorney, you need to have written down so that you don't get distracted or fall apart. If you do fall apart and get emotional, you can pull yourself back together.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm wondering, are there any other tools that you would recommend for women who are preparing for that first meeting with an attorney?
for the first meeting with the attorney, you want to find out if they've dealt with partners of sex addicts. You want to ask them if they're familiar with a betrayal trauma and where your little mind is right now. If they're not familiar at all with dealing with partners, I would not stay with that attorney unless they appear willing to learn. Other things that you'll want to look for is if they're well-respected in the community. Sometimes even an attorney who doesn't know a lot, but all the other attorneys really respect and admire him or her, that's a good thing, especially in front of a judge. I'm not exactly sure if you want to seek a woman or a man attorney. I think it would depend on how you feel when you walk in. If you're uncomfortable initially with that attorney, that discomfort's probably not going to leave. Trust your gut. Ask your friends if they know an attorney that has been helpful to them or to other people that they know. Most attorneys
Go ahead.
If you've got a referral, that's an even better way to go if you know someone who knows them.
Yeah, I know that I get a lot of requests from people, partners, and just clients in general that say, who do you know that's really good? And as a clinician, we are not able to give a recommendation because if that referral went south, if that attorney became abusive, if he didn't or she didn't do their job, it would interrupt and interfere with the clinical relationship. And so it is so important to check in with friends. And I don't know, did you have many friends or family that had divorce experience in their lives?
No. I have been divorced twice prior to this divorce, both from abusive men. And so I kind of understood the concept, but I didn't understand it with children. And I certainly didn't understand it to this level. And then our church, it's a big church, but there's maybe three divorced women in the church. So I was pretty much walking by myself, but I did have two or three women who got me. And they were the ones that just really helped scoop me up and pray for me and walk next to me and give me a sounding board and for me to be able to call and say, oh, this is really frustrating with this attorney. Can you help me? But it doesn't. I don't think it takes a village to support you. If you've got one or two women that, or men, probably women, that get you, that can save you.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said that, and I just want to put a plug in for some of our APSATS coaches, because we have coaches at APSATS that run divorce groups for women. And they have, you know, 6, 8, 12-week groups. Now, Kim, you are a coach, correct?
Yes.
And are you doing anything for divorcees or women that are thinking about getting separated?
I am not running a group, but I am accepting clients, and I am APSATS trained. So that's very exciting for me, too, to be able to kind of join into your family. But I am able to be very specific and target in helping women as they either in their initial stages, their middle stages, and then on the end stages of going through divorce and trying to figure out their life, what they want to do with their life after a divorce. How are they going to handle telling the children, if they're going to tell the children? So I am very specific to assisting women who are either contemplating it or just feel like they're in a bad place. So.
Well, and how can our listening audience get a hold of you if they are in the process of a divorce or contemplating it or have been divorced and are looking to take their life to the next level? How can they contact you?
Well, you can visit my website, which is called Coaching Hope for the number 4 you.com. You can call me at 937-210-9411, or you can email me at coachinghope4u@gmail.com.
And so, obviously, right now I'm talking with Kim Petroni. Is that how you say your last name, Kim Petroni?
Yes, ma'am. Yep.
Okay. And you volunteer to help women figure out how they could get through this terribly difficult process. I mean, you said, hey, look, Carol, I would love to talk on the podcast about how to do that. I'm going to ask you, when is a therapeutic separation a next step in the divorce process? Because let's face it, in Indiana at least, and I know we've got listeners all over the world, couples are expected to stay together until the divorce occurs. And that can be very, very uncomfortable for both parties. So talk a little bit about a therapeutic separation and how that fits into this process.
Oh, that is tricky. If you're living in the same home as someone who has been abusive as a sex addict and you're the partner, you cannot heal while they're there. Your body's on constant high alert. The adrenaline runs through you, and you just, your body kind of deteriorates. I believe that healing would be best anytime that you feel that your body is not working anymore, that your children are in danger. I hear a lot about what you're discussing about families having to stay together until something is finalized, and it is just traumatic for the partner trying to heal. My thoughts are not to stay in the same home if there's any way that you can remove yourself from it just so that you can get some healing.
Well, and I heard you say earlier that you really need some safe people that can be there for you, even physically, if you do need a safe place to go, that you can trust them. I do think legally, at least here in Indiana, that unfortunately you have got to get that legally approved ahead of time for a therapeutic separation, because if the mom takes the kids and leaves the home, there are legal ramifications. So our listening audience needs to make sure in their own state that they can have their attorney get something set up for them.
That is absolutely correct. I was very fortunate in that my spouse left the home right after we had the disclosure. I asked him if he could just leave for a couple of nights, and he went and stayed in a hotel room, and then even though I offered him the opportunity to come back into the home, he wouldn't come because I didn't want him in the bedroom. So that worked out in my favor. Absolutely, the Lord watching out for me. But yes, do think twice before you pick your kids up to leave, except in a situation if you are unsafe or he's being physically abusive to you. That's a whole different ballgame.
Very good point, a whole different ballgame. So now I'm going to ask you, what has been your experience in working with women? What do you advise a woman when they're wondering if they're ready to throw in the towel on the marriage and file for divorce? What do you encourage them to think, feel, and do?
That's a good question, too. I'm going to start with what they feel. And if you feel that you are continually being broken and that you don't feel his improvement, you'll know when he's making honest improvements. And if you feel like you are being broken down over and over and over again, that's about the time that you want to throw in the towel. And I say that to do it wisely, my throwing in the towel, I stepped back and said, I'm not going anywhere, but I am going to file for divorce. I'm still here. If the Lord wants us to work back together, he'll make it happen. And that was 2 years ago that I filed, 2.5 years ago that I filed. But I think trust your gut. Even though your gut has been, you haven't listened to it, you haven't heard it, it hasn't been real clear on all the deception in the house, trust your gut right now. If you know in your gut and you feel in your gut that it's not changing, then probably a different action needs to occur. A lot of it's not based on things that you can see. However, you can throw out a list of boundaries that you want, and if you see those boundaries keep getting taken advantage of, then you probably know he's not trying with his heart either. But it's going to be so, so different for each person. But don't be afraid of taking the step out of the marriage because of what church has sanctioned as divorce is a horrible thing. You have to do it for your own self and your own well-being.
Well, that's a really good point. And you've brought up the church and several times today. And that can be another betrayal, too. If the church really wants you to stay in a situation that you know is not healthy for yourself or the kids. So that's where, again, you say, it may be tough to know what your intuition, your gut is saying, but just give it some time and listen to it and let that be your guide. Because truly, you know, we do make decisions using our head, heart, and gut. And your intuition will rarely fail, especially now as a partner when you know what you know. You, Kim, were very aware that he was becoming angrier and more spiteful and retaliated. And you knew that you needed a committee, if you will, a group of people that could support you and also help to advocate for you. And you've given us some great tools. You have a specific sheet on divorce. Would you mind sharing that?
Yeah, it's just a few pointers on things to prepare yourself for, like for attorney shopping, kind of things for you to expect when you get to court if you go down the divorce road. And then just some other pointers that I've already brought up as well, too, kind of about hoarding cash and finding your coach. One of the additional things that I haven't mentioned is that if you're working with someone, if your partner, your spouse, the words are not trustworthy. If you find that the words are kind of mush coming out of his mouth and he's not in the home with you, there's a website that's approved by the courts. It's called Our Family Wizard, and it allows you to take all communication and put it in writing. And sometimes that is really helpful for a woman trying to figure out what truth is, to have everything in writing and only communicate that way. That is, I did that at the very beginning, and I don't know kind of what clicked in me, except that I felt every time I talked to him, the stories were changing, or I wasn't getting exact clear answers out of him. And by putting everything down in writing, it made it much easier for me to say, oh, well, no, that's gaslighting. He said one thing here, he didn't say it there. So I guess, yeah, I think that's, but so the sheet is just a real quick, it's not perfect, but it just kind of gives you a place to start.
And is that anywhere on your website?
It's not, but it will be this evening.
I'll
put a link to
that
on this evening.
Yeah, that you're savvy enough. So if you want those tips and tools, some of the things that you've heard Kim talk about today, she calls it the Court Assistance for Partners Seeking Divorce. It was created by Kim Petroni at coachinghope-4u, and that's the letter four, and then U is just the letter U. So you got four, the number four, and you, the letter U, at gmail.com. And her actual website is www.coachinghopeforyou.com. And she says, this is by no means fail-proof nor inclusive, but she gives you 8 tips on attorney shopping and 2 tips on what to expect in court. And I, you know, I thought this was interesting. You said, don't expect a judge to rule in your favor. And that is so true, isn't it? You think that a judge would be able to see and figure it all out. And unfortunately, judges don't necessarily know. And again, here in Indiana, judges won't get involved. They are like, look, it's 50-50. I'm just going to cut it into this. He doesn't want homeschooling. She does. I'll give it to her for that. And then he gets this. And it's really all about compromise and negotiation. And, you know, I don't mean to be negative, but that is the number one relationship skill, to compromise and negotiate. And yet I have a team of therapists, they're actually married, and they say in relationship counseling, well, you know, Carol, compromise and negotiation is when you both feel like you got screwed, meaning you didn't really get what you wanted. You know, you had to give in. There had to be some things that you just had to accept, and then, as you would say, Kim, have faith that God's going to take care of you, even though you didn't get the full meal deal, right?
Yeah, I think that my bottom line was that I don't want to ever look back and regret not asking for something. I want to be able to say, going forward, I have done everything I know to do. And then it's in God's hands, or the judge's hand, or the magistrate, but I've done it all.
Yeah, very good point. And then educate yourself. And if you didn't have a piece of paper, Kim believes that one mom's battle and betrayal trauma recovery are great locations for information concerning documentation and setting boundaries. You know, it's so interesting because I, too, trained under Barbara Steffens, and she really did say, from the second you find out about discovery, it's not like we're preparing you for divorce, but you do need to figure out a way to save some cash so that you're not financially dependent on him 100%. And so I'm just going to ask you, as we begin to wrap up, Kim, how did you find that cash?
I started, every time I went to the grocery store, I'd take out $20-$40 cash. Like at the end when you check out and it doesn't show up on your bank account that cash is, you know, if you go to the ATM and you pull cash out, it says you pulled cash out. On my grocery receipts, it would show the extra $20, but it never showed up at the bank. So I was able to just kind of keep pulling that money and keep it safe in case I needed to buy groceries. So that's what I did. And it was all just because I had a gut feeling that something was going to happen.
Yeah, and I think for you it was specifically tough because, again, you didn't work outside of the home. And so you had to rely on your family income, if you will, to start saving some of that money. So that is great advice. I so thank you for helping our listeners out and giving them some food for thought on divorce. And again, I want to remind everybody that Kim can be reached by going to www.coachinghope4u@gmail.com. So Kim, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap it up for the show?
Oh, I'm so grateful that you allowed me to come on here, and I want women to have courage and hope, and that there is something at the end of, even though it looks like your world is imploding, that there's a plan out there for you, and I'll be happy to help you through it.
Oh, I love that. And so tell this group, tell our listening audience, since the divorce, you have trained with APSAP, and now you're willing to give back by helping women through divorce. How are the kids doing?
Oh, they're doing well. It's not an easy path. We're still in and out of court, and it's rocky, but the children are doing quite well, and they're fun, and we have a good time together, so they're still at home, and that's kind of where we are with that. So thank you for asking.
Excellent. Well, you make it a great week, and thank you for pitch hitting for me. I so appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Perfect.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Carol.
Talk to you soon. All right, Kim Petroni, and she is just doing amazing work with women. And I think you've got to realize that, you know, this is such a tough situation. You know, it's like trauma after trauma after trauma. And having support people that get it, wow, it doesn't get any better than that. Hey, I'm glad to be back with you. Back to a regular schedule. So I so look forward to talking with you next week, same place, same time. And don't hesitate to send me emails if you want to talk the first 15 minutes of the show. You can reach me at carol@carolthecoach.com. And I got to tell you, I am publishing my post-traumatic growth online course over the weekend. I've got some people looking at it right now, just making sure it is all in order. You know, I've spent over 500 hours on it. So I got to tell you, it is so amazing. You will find the partners that talk about post-traumatic growth so inspirational, so motivational. They give their tips on what they did to get healthy. I have a PowerPoint presentation that I actually talk through. You can see me giving it on 7 different modules, the modules that I believe lend themselves to post-traumatic growth. There are audio segments. There are video segments. There are, I think I have over 40 articles that I wrote for this on post-traumatic growth. So if you're a woman that is wondering, what is post-traumatic growth? How can I get to that? This is a great online course for you. And if you're somebody that goes, hey, I think I am in post-traumatic growth. I mean, Kim is clearly in post-traumatic growth, even though the legal battles aren't finished yet. Then I want you to take this course. Yes, it costs. You are absolutely worth it. Go to my website at the beginning of next week, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach, and at least take a look at it. Take a look at the different modules. Okay? All right, I'll see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio by APSOTS.com.
For more information, go to APSOTS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual trauma.
You know, I'm glad that she reminded me it's APSOTS.org. We'll see you all next week. There will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself.